What's really changing in 2023 is for the first time ever, there are going to be more adult Gen Zers, so the age 18 plus, than adolescent Gen Zers. And as you said, Gen Zers don't really think about opening up a bank account until they need to. And once you hit adulthood, those financial needs really start to develop. So that's the sea change that we're sort of focusing on here. And why I would argue that, you know, it's a valid trend to focus on this year in particular.
Hello and welcome to the Banking and Payments Show, a Behind the Numbers podcast from eMarketer. Today is January 10th and this is our first show of 2023. I'm Rob Rubin, GM of Financial Services here at Insider Intelligence and your host. If you enjoy this podcast, please give us a five-star rating and subscribe. In today's episode, we're following a different format than previous shows. I invited Dan Van Dyke, VP of Content at Insider Intelligence, and Tiffany Montez, Principal Analyst in Banking, to the show to discuss the top two trends in banking to look for in 2023, plus an out-there prediction that you'll want to tether yourself to your listening device to hear. For each of the trends, I'll present the numbers behind why it's important, and then we'll have a conversation about how different players will capitalize, adapt, emerge, or perish. It's going to be so interesting. First, I want to welcome back Dan and Tiffany. Hey, Dan, how you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing well, Rob. How are you doing?
I'm really excited. Is this your third time back?
I think so. It's a hat trick, and I'm excited to start the new year with a new podcast.
I appreciate the hockey reference.
Absolutely. Every now and then I can pull out a sports reference, but it's once in a blue moon.
Which leads me to our great sports fan, Tiffany. Hey, Tiffany, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Hi there. This is also my third podcast, so I'm excited to celebrate anniversary with Dan. So happy new year to both of you.
Happy new year.
It's great. You guys represent 66% of my guests as this is our ninth show.
Breaking records over here. Breaking records. Yeah.
Tiffany and Dan, I want to get right to our first trend because as my two Gen Zers would say, it's bussin'.
Oof.
The first trend is Gen Z breaks into financial services mainstream. And it's been my experience that kids don't know anything about banking until they need to. And I'm not sure that my 18-year-old is ever going to need to know how to write a check. I love this trend because you can see quickly where Gen Zers will consume their banking services. So before we start talking about it, let me get to some numbers. In the U.S., according to the U.S. Census, there are 69 million Gen Zers, and those are people born between 1997 and 2012. And that compares to 72 million millennials who were born between 1981 and 1996. So pretty close in size, and that's a lot of people. In 2022, we project that 29 million, or 42% of Gen Zers, were mobile banking users. That's a lot. Because if we back out the third of Gen Zers because they're actually under 15 years old, that means that 63% of Gen Zers 15 or older used mobile banking last year. That compares to 86% of millennials as a comparison. So there's a lot of usage. It seems exciting. But from my perspective, I don't see why a generational segment is our number one banking trend.
I have to cut in. I have to use some Gen Z slang and say that that's cap. I just felt 1,000 cringes across the metaverse.
I don't know what cap is. So I'm going to have to ask.
I think it means like a lie. I'm not totally sure, actually.
Okay.
But so let me defend this trend. So you mentioned that there are 69 million Gen Zers, those that are born between 97 and 2012.
Correct.
What's really changing in 2023 is for the first time ever, there are going to be more adult Gen Zers, so those age 18 plus, than adolescent Gen Zers. And as you said, Gen Zers don't really think about opening up a bank account until they need to. And once you hit adulthood, those financial needs really start to develop. So that's the sea change that we're sort of focusing on here. And why I would argue that, you know, it's a valid trend to focus on this year in particular.
I would also agree with that. It's not necessarily that they are going to have different banking needs. It's just how they do their banking that's different. And if you don't get ahead of how they want to bank, which looks different than traditional banking services in the way that other generations consume financial products, you're going to end up behind even before you get started.
Absolutely. So How should banks find and influence this generation, given that they're a little bit different in that way?
So I would say Gen Zers, I think we all know that they're digital natives and they rely heavily on digital for their finances. And we know that behavior for them is not going to change. So if we start to look at players across banking and even this finance sphere, financial institutions really have to act now to be able to grab Gen Zers' business while also trying to lay the groundwork for upselling them in the future. So in other words, it's not just about building products, services, and digital features that attract them now, but it's also about laying a foundation to build a graduation strategy, meaning a financial graduation strategy that helps move this generation over time into more complex products and really help them grow into a banking relationship.
I think that's a great point. I would add on to that, that investing in emerging social channels is going to be so critical to actually meet Gen Z where they are. We put out some fantastic forecasts on social adoption at Insider Intelligence, and TikTok has definitely been the fastest growing social channel by far. What's important about TikTok, and where a lot of banks who have been first movers have really got this wrong, is that it's not enough to simply invest in the channel. You need a mouthpiece. You need influencers that are active to give you credibility and so ultimately reach the generation that you're looking to reach. So following the lead of companies like Current that have paved the way in leveraging influencer marketing and emerging social channels will show kind of the future path that other banks will catch up to eventually.
Do you think that building brand loyalty is going to be different with Gen Zers than earlier generations?
Yeah. You know, what I would say is there's a saying in the banking industry in general that anytime you build experiences, that you need to build those experiences where your consumers are. And if you think about Gen Z, where they are is in social media. They're not only building their own awareness in social channels, but they're also following other people that represent what their needs are. And so it really does become about thinking about a diverse set of needs where consumers go to find information on products and services and being able to build experiences around that. So I think Dan hit on the need to think about finfluencers and fintalk and really going out there and cutting through the noise in platforms where Gen Zers actually go to find information on products and services and getting referrals. And also starting to think a lot more about the non-traditional players like Apple and PayPal that consumers are increasingly turning to for financial solutions.
I think it's fascinating to talk about how banks will leverage social media channels to win Gen Zers. We should capture examples and do a best and worst show. I think it'll be funny because there's going to be some really bad ones, I'm confident.
Absolutely. I think I've come across a couple CMOs on LinkedIn doing TikTok dances, and that's not the way.
It can't be. But now let's get to our next trend. Neobanks near the end of their runway. This is a trend that basically talks about how investors want to see profitability, which has been very elusive for many of today's crops of neobanks. So let me give you a few numbers about why some neobanks are going to be at the end of their runway. According to our forecast, neobank account growth will slow to under 10% per year between 2022 and 2026. So just to give you overall sizes, that's like 9% of households had a neobank account in 2022, and it'll grow to 13% of households in 2026. And then another harbinger is that according to CB Insights, fintech funding dropped 32.7% quarter over quarter in Q2 22 after falling over 20% in Q1. So that is a record plunge for funding. You know, our second episode of the Banking and Payments Show, Tiffany, if you remember, was about neobanks. And I thought that you had summed it up really well, saying that the neobank category is evolving and that some neobanks are certainly going to perish and that the next generation is going to make improvements. So I guess I feel like I'm the naysayer here on the trends. Where's the trend here? Neobanks have come and gone before. I don't get it.
I think it's more about the evolution and where they've been and where they're going to that really is the trend. So if you start thinking about neobanks in the podcast that we were on, the second episode, as you mentioned, we talked a lot about profitability and really about having to reinvent business models and thinking really hard about who they are now and who they need to become to survive. And so the trend really is more about who is going to make it versus who's not going to make it. And that largely hinges on profitability.
Let's think about profitability, because a big chunk of spending for the neobanks has always been in customer acquisition. And you hear numbers going all over. I've always sort of taken a rule of thumb. It costs $200 to acquire a new everyday checking customer when you count your marketing costs. That's the number that I have always sort of benchmark heard. I don't know if it's accurate. It would be different for each bank. But given the pressure on profitability and this huge expense of winning customers, how will neobanks win customers in 2023? And as a follow-up, is the profile of who they target going to change?
So I think part of their game will be to try to attract a wider swath of customers with products and services, particularly focused on consumers that will drive higher account balances, I think is one. I think we've already seen a couple of neobanks that are doing some referral-based marketing where they're trying to get income on referring consumers to use other services that they may not own, but maybe align with financial management. At the same time, I think we're also going to see risk management controls tighten. So as you mentioned earlier, after years of growth at all costs, neobanks really are going to have to revamp their underwriting policy and really focus on attracting consumers, again, who are more profitable and that are going to bring higher account balances into the fold.
Dan, we did an episode on super apps, and I'd love to have you jump in because you were team Nubank in that episode. So I would really love to hear what you think as it relates to Nubank, because I think that they're actually a pretty interesting neobank as it relates to this.
Yeah, I mean, there are always one or two examples that seem to defy the economic rules of gravity. And I would say that Nubank is one of those examples. When you look at our trends, and getting back to your core question of why is this a trend? Yeah. Why in 2023? We do draw a hard line in the sand in saying that we expect that the total field of global neobanks, which we count at 291 as of 2022, is going to contract to 235. So that represents about a 20% contraction, between 15 and 20%. And Nubank and many others will be one of many survivors within the field. So what we don't want is for this to trend to misread as all neobanks are nearing the end of their runway. It's really that we are going to see belt tightening. We are going to see a long overdue contraction. And I think that against that backdrop, the advantages that come with scale, the greater cost efficiency, the fact that you can amortize all of your customer expenses over a larger customer base will allow them to overcome those costs of customer acquisition and actually grow throughout this period. And Nubank will be a great example of that.
So Nubank's an example where they don't offer just one product. They have a number of different ways to make money. But what types of new products are we going to see from neobanks that is going to help them reach profitability?
Tiffany mentioned a good one in affiliate marketing being a critical revenue stream to drive.
Yeah.
I think one product that we won't see in terms of diversification is more buy now, pay later services. In fact, Apple is expected to move into that space. I don't see it happening. I'm calling a surprise prediction that Apple will actually not release its buy now, pay later service in 2023.
Is that a new trend? An undocumented trend that we just got from
you,
Dan?
I mean, it's not one of our trends, but it's something that I believe.
All right.
And in terms of other services that neobanks can offer, Tiffany listed out the major ones. So there's subscription. Of the ones that weren't listed, I didn't hear SMB, and I think that that will be another critical revenue stream that a lot of neobanks will focus on in the year to come. Bain Capital recently put out a great report that looked at all the different revenue streams. But just to sum it all up, subscriptions are critical, affiliate revenue and SMB are the three ones to watch.
Great. I'm really interested in the evolution of neobanks, especially in the direction of super apps. Nubank is certainly one to watch, but before we get to our last out there prediction, let's take a break to hear about our eMarketer benchmarks. I've seen a lot of benchmark studies in my career, and I can tell you that insider intelligence has added a valuable wrinkle. Normally, in benchmarking, you identify the feature and competitive products to compare and take an inventory. Typically, analysts order the features to generate rankings. But instead of rank ordering the features based on what we think, we ask customers of those products to tell us which features they find valuable. So number one in our rankings offers the most features customers value. Our clients leverage these benchmarks to evaluate the strengths and opportunities within key categories of features, inform future product roadmaps, and identify what's most valuable to customers. Log on to the Insider Intelligence platform and subscribe to access this valuable data today. Well, welcome back. I promised at the top of the show that if you tethered yourself to your listening device, we would talk about an out there prediction for 2023. But before I do, I want to put you guys on the spot. Was there a trend or prediction that is interesting and could happen, but didn't really make the cut this year?
Yes. So the one that didn't make the cut was that ChatGPT would revolutionize banking. The reason that we don't think that's going to happen is, although ChatGPT is mind-blowing and it can be a creative partner, it can help you figure out gifts for the holidays, which I actually had to do, it is bad in a number of ways that hold it back from being an effective chatbot for banking context. So one is that it frequently makes things up. Two is that it...
it's a politician.
Yeah, that's right. Cannot do math also applies to that one. And so for those two reasons, and then also concerns around things like algorithmic bias, it's very unlikely that banks will be able to use ChatGPT or OpenAI or GPT-3 or any of the other generative AI frontrunners for customer-facing applications. There will be applications within banks that they should explore, like having competitive intelligence teams put out newsletters using ChatGPT, but nothing that will see generative AI directly interfacing with customers.
Or coding, even.
Or coding, right? Yeah. That's one of the front-runner technologies that it's very good at doing.
I think for me, I mean, maybe not for this year, but it does help, I would say, smaller banks that don't necessarily have the same IT departments as the larger banks, in that they could leverage some of those AI resources for coding as well. That's pretty interesting, but I do want to do the drum roll because I teased this out, this third out there prediction of ours. The trend is that Tether is going to go down this year. That's our out there prediction. And for those of you who don't know, Tether is an asset-backed cryptocurrency stablecoin. Tether tokens, their value is pegged to the dollar, and they allow customers the ability to transact across different blockchains without the sort of volatility and complexity that's typically associated with digital tokens. And for that matter, Tether is the largest stablecoin, and they are an asset-backed coin, as I mentioned, and they have $65 billion in capitalization. That's what they report. So, Dan, do you want to take this? Why are they going to go down?
So this is something where I've stood on my soapbox a number of times. And in fact, I had even pitched to Money 2020, which is a large financial services conference, this idea that Tether would implode before the conference was held so that I could potentially speak on this. It didn't happen, but I'm going to double down and I'm going to make the same prediction for 2023. It happened with FTX. And now there's a lot of smoke that is continuing to pour from Tether. It's been the subject of regulators sniffing around it. There have been investigative pieces by Bloomberg, all of which are tied up with this basic idea that there have been no reputable audits of the funding that is backing Tether that have occurred.
So they say that they have $65 billion in assets, but we don't know that?
They likely have many assets. However, whether it is actually the exact amount they claim is what is in question. And if it's any less than what they claim, what will be triggered is basically a bank run, where folks will start to withdraw their money and more folks will pile in after them. And we've seen this story start to play out with some algorithmic stablecoins in 2022. It seems highly likely that there is something going on behind the surface with Tether that will result in the same scenario playing out this year. And so I'm definitely looking for Tether to collapse next year and for it to trigger even more regulatory action than we've already seen, with regulators finally catching up to the giant systemic risks that are posed with loosely regulated industry run by 30-year-olds and 20-year-olds who don't have a lot of experience within financial services and are propped up as the next big thing. We've seen that play out again and again. It's my belief that Tether's the next to go.
All right. I think that is a fun prediction, but not for Tether. Today's episode was a lot of fun. We talked about our top two banking trends for 23, that Gen Zers are now entering banking age, and that there are more troubled waters for many neobanks. And we also obviously raised some real concerns about the viability of Tether. I want to thank Dan and Tiffany for helping us kick off the new year. And thanks to everyone for listening to the Banking and Payments Show and eMarketer podcast. Also, thank you to our editor, Todd. In today's episode, we referenced our new report, Banking Trends to Watch in 2023. Check out the show notes for a link to this report. Our next episode is on January 17th, and you'll not want to miss it. See you then.